This is WHFR Dearborn, live from the WHFR studios in the Student Center building at Henry Ford Community College. We're continuing our pledge drive, Radiothon 2008. We need your pledges in order to stay on the air and stay broadcasting. This is Jay Koronick, and we'll be with you for the next hour for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Important weather update for those listening live right now that you just heard, but we'll repeat it again. In a moment, Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. will be on the show and is expected to arrive in just a few minutes. Actually, some bad traffic in West Dearborn, which we might talk about, but no, there was an accident that he may tell us about, but he was not involved in that. Okay, so let's start with our theme, and we'll be right back with my guest hosts and Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly coming up a little later in the hour. So this is another edition of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, April 11th, 2008. My name is Jay Koronick. Thank you for being with us today on a special Radiothon 2008 edition. Yes, we need your pledge of support. We need you, our loyal listeners who listen to perhaps this show regularly, to know that once a year we really have to ask for your help. We have to do that. 60% of our money comes from you, our loyal listeners. And the number is 313-845-9676. If you don't have a Visa, MasterCard, or Discover card, we can send you a postage-paid envelope to send us back a check or a money order, by the way. We would be happy to take your credit card over the phone, of course. Or you can go to our website, whfr.fm, and you can give us a pledge of support electronically, too. Now, we have some great pledge incentives, and even though this is the new WHFR Journal, and we expect to cover a lot of topics about Dearborn with Mayor O'Reilly in just a few minutes, let me explain that for a $30 pledge, you can get one of our new WHFR logo T-shirts. They're black, any size that you like, from small to 3XL. Wow, tent size.
The logo glows in the dark.
Yes, and the logo, if it's the glow-in-the-dark logo, we're joined in the studio by two of my co-hosts from past shows, and both of them are also hosts of our WHFR forum programs on Saturday morning. So let me introduce them now, and we'll continue mentioning these pledge incentives. The voice in the background you first heard was that of Ned Apigian. Ned,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you for having us again today.
Okay, I'm just trying to find out what microphone you're on.
That
WHFR black T-shirt for $30 is either in the logo on the front that says WHFR, non-commercial independent radio, is either in neon green, or it's in a hot pink color, or the glow in the dark is actually kind of it looks white in the daytime.
Oh, that's only that one glows.
Right, the others are just so bright that they may glow anyway, right, but they're not technically glow in the dark, but they're very bright, and it's really, really cool. There's May O'Reilly.
Oh, at the
door. Okay, he's coming in, so he's going to be brought into the studios in just a moment right now. Let me tell you, that's a $30 pledge level, and so Ned or Susan Morell, who's also here, say hello, Susan.
Good morning.
Okay, it's afternoon, but that's close.
I mean, afternoon. I mean, it seems like morning. I just got here. What can I say?
Well, you can say hello, and the fact that Mayor O'Reilly has just come in the studio. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Hey, how you doing, Jay?
Well, we're very good.
All right, good.
He's helping himself to a chair. Would you like a bit of coffee or water?
I'm
we have
fine,
a water
right
bottle.
Now.
He's
good,
fine,
thanks.
He says.
Yeah.
Okay. That's your microphone right there. Give us that traffic report from West Dearborn,
Whoa.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. I had a meeting in Inkster. I was coming through, and
all of West Dearborn was backed up, all the side roads, because there was, unfortunately, a pedestrian hit on Michigan at Mason. And so, you know, I get the page, but it doesn't help me change anything. So.
Mm. No. Right. Well, you're very busy. I know you had a meeting in Inkster before, and of course, just going through your resume of associations, you know, government and social groups that you've been part of even before you became mayor, and now as mayor, you're pretty heavily booked every day, I bet.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I let Bev just put anything on my schedule. I go wherever it tells me.
Well, I see. Okay. If it's 1 p.m. on Friday the 11th, it's WHFR. I get
right.
the idea.
That's what it says.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that we could have you here today. It's kind of become a tradition that during our pledge drive, and that number, folks, is 313-845-9676, that we do have to ask for your pledges. And previous to Mayor O'Reilly, Mayor Guido was here almost every single year for the 10 years before when we started this. And so it's sort of a tradition to have the mayor here. And it's usually just a discussion, sort of a follow-up discussion of what's going on in the city, some of the issues that came up in your State of the City address and some other topics. So I have...
Great.
A list here. It'll overpower you. We're not going to go down the list, though, but just so you sort of know what the reference points are. We're just going to start. Remember, folks, either Ned or Susan will run and catch the phone. If you can pledge $30 or $52 or more just once a year, that's all we ask to help support local non-commercial radio. We would really appreciate that call, and you need to do it now. Next week is not our pledge drive, although we'll take the money anyway. So it's 313-845-9676. Okay, Mr. Mayor.
Yep.
I'll start with those big questions, and you can just go however you want to, and maybe we won't talk about some of the other things later. But in the last year since we talked to you on Radiothon last year, and you've been mayor now about 16 months, something like that. What do you think are the three biggest successes or the things that you've been most proud of accomplishing?
Well, we did get the charter amendments passed, which is a very important thing. Every so often you have to update and take a fresh look at what is basically our constitution for the city.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a great team. The charter commission, the people elected, did an outstanding job. And so that was a challenge that we met, and that went very well. We have finally passed the development agreement for the replacement facility at the corner of Michigan and Schaefer, where Montgomery Wards has been. That project is going to be very exciting for the area and convince people that investing in Dearborn is a good thing. So I'm very proud of that. And we've begun the culture change at City Hall, which I think is very important. It's one of the things I've really wanted to do.
You're not a hip-hop mayor, are you?
No,
by
I didn't.
By comparison to Mayor Guido, not that kind of cultural change.
Not that kind of cultural change.
Okay. I didn't think so, no.
Cultural change in how we our outlook toward the job we do.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you're always very well-dressed, but I wouldn't want to call that bling-bling or anything.
Yeah, no, let's not have your listeners think that
I
walked in
okay,
here.
Just wanted to clear that up. But, well, certainly, just to follow up on the charter, there was nothing really radical about the changes, although there were changes for the better, but everybody carefully looked at every part of the charter before it went ahead. And so that just makes things a little easier. Wasn't there a combining of departments, too,
well,
in a couple
that.
Cases?
It
allows
become,
for that.
It allowed government to be more flexible. You know, we get into a habit thinking, well, things will always be as they are. And clearly that's the worst idea, worst way of thinking we can have. So the charter really has some areas of flexibility which are really important. We don't have present plans, although I'm looking at some realignments and some consolidation as ways of just being more efficient.
Sure.
It also allows us to perhaps enter agreements with other communities on some joint ventures. So it gives us a more flexibility. It even allows us to realign our budget year, which I've kind of thought, you know, we aren't jumping into that, but having that ability. You know, the federal and state government are October 1 to September 30.
Oh.
The city is on a July 1 to June 30.
Like the schools,
And so some of it is aligning because with federal and state programs, we're doing sort of 2-year ends. Mm. I mean, just so it's just practical things. And they may not sound like a lot to the listeners, but they have to do with the ability to create efficiencies, which means that you can focus on services and not on sort of administrative detail.
Mm-hmm.
As I remember, Organized Union was upset about something in the charter pertaining to privatizing, outsourcing. Did that happen? Was that left in the charter?
Oh, yeah, that language was in, but the thing that's interesting is it was not a change in practice except it put it in there. The charter did not did not prevent the city from doing that. But this language is more upfront because it actually clarified that it's allowable.
Let me just indicate to Mr. Mayor, John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr., because he came in, I didn't introduce him to my two co-hosts that he may have heard on our shows in the past. Neda Pigian is one of our volunteers, retired semi-active architect, and has a master's in city planning. Imagine getting a master's in it. But he also tried to run.
Failed
politician. Three times for Dearborn Heights City Council.
There you go. I know the name.
We'll seen it. We'll take him here. Yep. You know, there's no problem.
That's right.
And Susan Morrell is our WHFR news director and also now our promotions manager. Now, both of these folks, too, Mr. Mayor, they host our talk shows on Saturday morning, which are pre-recorded. Ned does one. It's a heavy-duty intellectual history. He has some great college professors that talk about, you know, the past and how it affects the present. We just finished. He had done a sort of a history of Islam and the culture of Islam over the years, and also just finished talking about Marxism too with a few profs. And
Then and Now.
Then and Now is the title of it. And they're going to do a special show tomorrow morning, a special pledge pitch from 9 to 10, and then highlights of the several people that are doing shows for us. Susan's show is called Pet Lovers Lane. Go ahead.
Very good. Yes, very good.
And the pets are at home, and so I'm a little worried about them because we have a tornado watch until 7 p.m.
My pager said till 9 p.m.
So there you go.
Let me just take another break. We'll get back to this. They did hear this over WHFR because as a licensed broadcast facility, the message patched through automatically, and we'll be repeating it. But the National Weather Service has issued today, April 11th, a tornado watch. Now, it doesn't mean a tornado is immediately coming, but the conditions are right. Could be rapidly changing weather conditions, maybe wind, maybe hail even if you don't see the little twister thing. Mm-hmm. And it does include Wayne County. And that was issued, we show here at 3 minutes to one before the show, and it says effective here until about 7 o'clock tonight. So maybe it's ending a little quicker. But just be alert out there. If things start getting dark or, clouding up or something, it could actually get even worse than that. So be sure to be careful. It's another reason to have a nice local broadcast facility that will keep mentioning that frequently through the day. Okay. Now, I'll let Susan ask question number two so I don't have to have any negative blame here for this one.
Okay. Well, we were just curious, Mr. Mayor, if you had any major disappointments or frustrations with ongoing projects, and we would expect that you would.
Yeah, I think there's the things you learn that you don't know. I mean, I always say, you know, being president of the council for 17 years does not mean that you know what you need to know to be mayor. And so becoming mayor, I was informed of some things that were pending that I didn't have reason to know. This combined sewer overflow project, CSO as it's known, is one that has some real major disappointments in it, some past practice.
Is that the one they're building now?
Well, no, that one is a new one. There's actually those are 7 and 8. So since they're going sequentially, we've built or partially built 6 before we got to that. But because they were not as open and apparent, the public wasn't as tuned into it. But we've had some problems at those that I learned about with contractors and so on that have caused that have the potential for issues leading to litigation over the thing. So that's an issue. It's not an immediate impact, and I don't think the city has actually done anything wrong. But in fact, I know we haven't done anything wrong. But the problem becomes that what's happening is the contractors are saying that NTH, who was our designer and contract manager, did not have the right soil conditions in the plan and so on. So that was a factor. They're saying, no, the contractor did not operate properly. I've been learning a lot more than I ever thought I would about the whole issue.
That's their business, NTH, geotechnical things.
Yes,
it's hard for them to not know.
Well, but if you get more than one contractor who are all saying it was changed soil conditions, you know, you understand. I'm a lawyer, so I'm going from the perspective of, I understand once you get into litigation, it's not necessarily exactly what's the truth, but what is the best advocacy. So, anyway, it's frustrating only because it's something where that project is very significant. It's the most costly infrastructure project Dearborn will ever do, I think. And so, you know, not having these problems surface just simply make that very difficult process more difficult. So that would be a frustration.
But it's a good thing that you're an attorney.
Yeah, well, at least I understand the scope of it, yeah.
He understands when he needs to consult other attorneys, too.
Thank you. Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely, Jay. Yeah. I am never acting as legal counsel for the city of Dearborn. That would be the biggest mistake I could make.
Well, and that's been a topic of discussion for a long time,
yeah.
There have been some, if not false starts, some problems with it. But it's mandated by the federal government, folks, and the city of Dearborn had to do it. We tried to find ways to partner with other folks,
yeah.
And we had to go ahead. We do have I did read somewhere about a month or two ago, there's some sort of extension, though, on some aspects of the final stages now, apparently.
Well, simply because the DEQ and, of course, the EPA, and this is all under Judge Fikens. Our federal Judge Fikens, I think, remains on the bench simply to bring this to closure. He's been doing this since the early 80s. But it's a good project. I mean, I have to tell you, in spite of everything and the cost and everything, it's long overdue. Mm-hmm. We built... unknowingly, or at least in innocence, we built systems that really were detrimental to the environment. People didn't really recognize the scope of it at the time, but really bad. So this is something that has to be done. I mean, I fully embrace the goal, but it's just painful because you're making up for past practice.
Right. But you understand all the contract law.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. And I understand, what our ramifications are. But, no, I have the extensions you're talking about, Jay, were just simply that they recognize that we're good faith. I mean, they're not challenging at all,
sure.
But we're making the best effort, so they're saying they're working.
I see. Gotcha. What at least one other frustration or just ongoing? I mean, certainly the development of East and West Dearborn, those projects, one or the other, is always ongoing. As you mentioned, the Redico developer and Oakwood Healthcare Plan was approved by the council this week, at least on the council's part, but I did watch that broadcast, as a matter of fact. It usually, I'm sorry, puts me to sleep, but, well, they don't have a good close-up of you often.
Oh, well,
you're sitting back to the side, and
see,
I know.
But, Jay, that's the thing people understand. That's not the mayor's meeting.
You had your close-up for 17
yeah.
years, I know, as the head of the council. But it looked to me like there could still, and we don't want to wish for bad luck here, of course, but there's still some final signatures that have to be done by Oakwood and maybe in combination with the medical center that's becoming partnered with them, right?
Well, yeah, what happened is this project started out as just a project with Midwest Health, Dr. Saffer, and Redico, and he was going to go on his own. Then he realized that in the future of medical operations, that won't work if you're not affiliated with a major hospital. So he began to shop the project to different hospitals. He talked to DMC, I think Henry Ford, but I know they already have their center, and Oakwood. And so it took time for them to negotiate that. And they're still, they've reached the agreement in principle, and they're negotiating the fine details. Oakwood cannot actually negotiate fully with them, although they and Redico have their plan, they've got the architecture, everything done. Mm-hmm. But legally, they don't have any position with Redico because Redico has a contract with Midwest. So when they buy Midwest, they buy the contract. So that's what makes this a little attenuated is that Oakwood can't really reach final agreement with Redico until they legally have the basis by purchasing Midwest. So it's sequential.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going well, and we are in constant dialogue with them. And the details are small enough and not significant enough to be a barrier.
But, of course, some frustrations were expressed by, at least two members of the council did vote against at this time, but four voted in favor of it, and it did pass. But it's not as many jobs as we'd hoped for. I mean, we always hope for more jobs coming into the city. And, in fact, was a question coming up later, but now we're going to have some vacant space on Schaefer.
Yes.
Because the medical center there is going to be moving down to the new building.
70,000 square feet of that will go into this, which is 150,000 square feet. So it's 80,000 more square feet.
Yeah.
It's not as labor-intensive because a lot of it is equipment-intensive, imaging center, oncology center, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But the key is the positions that we're getting from Oakwood, and there is an addition of about 186 positions over the 300 that are transferring.
Sure.
Plus, then that doesn't include the retail in there and so on. But the key is they're very good positions. There are people, who are radiologists, different things. So the income level and spending power and so on. And they're new positions. As Mr. Cuton from Oakwood pointed out, it's not a movement of people who are at Oakwood to here. There'll be new positions. So That's good. But the other thing is retention, which I think people miss. They say, well, if these jobs are moving down the street. But if they don't move, if they're going to move anyway, they don't move down the street, they move out of your city. And this is the thing that is a key in economic development is, and everybody talks about it, if you miss retention, then going out and recruiting isn't going to help you. Because if you have more people leave, you know, we had no control, but Visteon had a fairly good presence.
Yeah,
they decided to move. Okay, if we could have kept them here, that would have been better, even though they're already here. Somebody say, well, why are you fighting to keep them, you know, why are you fighting to keep jobs that are already here? Because if you lose them, you're in a deficit.
Our freelance engineer for WHFR, who we had to call in last Saturday because this whole studio we're in now went dead.
Yeah.
It went dead. And, of course, 24/7 operation, things do wear out. That's why we need your pledges today, folks. Keep those phones ringing, 313-845-9676. He was one of the top formerly Ford, and then Visteon engineers on digital audio, and the radios in most Ford cars were part of this gentleman's design effort. He's part of a small team that did that. Mm-hmm. He was laid off recently by Visteon's not doing so well either, even though they if they hadn't have gotten out of Dearborn, they might have been a lot better off. But so we're going to have a nice new facility. How many years until completion, though?
I heard
2-3 years before the medical center part, and then there's going to be senior housing?
Absolutely not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, actually, they're on a fast track. One of the issues that surfaced during this is that the lease for Midwest on Schaefer expires December of this year. So, and their landlord is not sure if he wants to. So they had to have an interim plan, and that was the difficulty because, you know, trying to move and move again. So they had to work out an interim plan in order to make this work. But they intend to start construction September 08 and take full occupancy of the medical center by the end of 09.
Mm-hmm.
So they would move in and operate by the end of 09. So that's pretty quick turnaround. Yeah. They're on aggressive.
And then another company, AmeriCare, are hoping after, I think it's after the medical center is finished, maybe to have some senior housing.
Well, American House, and that'll be built somewhat concurrently. The trouble is that doesn't have the urgency.
Right.
The Oakwood Center, they really want to get in there because they don't want to be in a temporary quarters. Then the American House will be built behind there. It's about 95 units. And American House is a product. My own mother was in the Dearborn Heights one for a little while when she's recuperating. And American House is a nice senior product. This will be an all-inclusive, so three meals a day, everything's included in the rental, services and so on. And so that will go in behind. And we're pretty sure there's not that much risk because Redico just acquired American House.
It's all in the family.
So it's now an internal process.
Well, that's a good family, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll move from the disappointments, frustration. Again, everything, you just have to keep going ahead, even if there are setbacks, of course, and that's just the way it is with things. I was very interested on the city website, and folks, if you haven't checked it out, cityofdearborn.org is their website.
Before you go to that,
go ahead, Ned. Okay.
I really wasn't familiar with details of what I read in the paper. The question of the tax increment authority.
Yeah.
I know I'm familiar with it in Dearborn Heights. There's parts of it I don't understand. Could you explain something about that, the listeners?
Sure.
It's a little complicated issue, and then in effect... Yeah. This is not a project those people are buying. You're ending up, they're using it. It's going to be owned by the city.
Oh, no. That's only the parking deck.
Only
the parking deck. Yeah, well, they're going to own it. They're going to pay taxes on it and everything.
Okay.
No. And there's a whole lot of things. What's happened is taxes.
How that increment works, because it takes money away from the city.
No, it doesn't.
In a way. The increment of the taxes, as I understand.
No, I'm going to tell you the truth. And that's the thing that people misunderstand. There's two things. Act 198, which is the thing that's given to industrial properties, the tax abatement. People conceive that that's a loss of taxes. It's not. It's a gain of taxes, but it's a net gain of only 50%. In other words, they're paying 50%. That's the industrial tax. But the TIF, or tax increment financing, was created as an economic development tool. So it's an incentive that you can offer to companies to build, you know, here. And unfortunately, once everybody implements it, then if you don't give it, you know, you're not going to get the building because somebody else is going to offer it. But the way it works is it's... When you set up this, and it's in a downtown development district, so you have to be under state law, you have to create it. We have two. Mm-hmm. We have the East Downtown Development and the West Downtown Development. Once you create that, you create a baseline. What's the current property value in that district? Then when new investment is invested anywhere in that district, the taxes from that new investment can be captured to be spent, the increment increase, can be captured to be spent in that district on activities and things in that district that are public in nature. So that's how it started. And a lot of things we do with the streetscapes, we do different things. We pay in our downtown districts, they pay to have sweeping done, you know, companies come and clean them and so on. So they've create an attractive thing. So it's sort of like a common area maintenance thing, you know, where, you know, they are collectively doing things for the district. Now, it extended that if there was a public parking deck or something to be built, that those funds could also be used for that. What we've done in this project, though, is we're not using the general capture from the district. That'll still go to the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority. And they will own the deck also, okay? But only the proceeds from the new investment from Redico, in other words, what Redico invests in Michigan Schaefer over and above its current value
goes to the parking deck.
That, well, it'll go to the DDA to pay the parking deck. But what we negotiated here after our experience in West Dearborn is that Redico has committed that even if that's not enough money to make the bond payments, they will make up the difference through an SAD. In other words, they're going to be totally obligated to run, operate, recapitalize, and pay for the decks out of funds generated from that project only.
Yeah, this is an important nuance to how money comes about that people
Unfortunately, I'm not sure even on the radio they can catch all the nuances.
Right.
I was trying to take notes. I'm lost here. But but the good news is, folks, these things are covered, and you know this show is based on and jumps out from the two local papers, Dearborn Times Herald and Dearborn Press and Guide, and we always thank them for providing a couple free copies for us, as well as something the Times Herald just did. Let me just jump on that. It is another tax issue, but it's the parking deck you mentioned. In West Dearborn, I noticed that, and I knew this a while back, we weren't making enough money, I guess, on the parking lots and the lots, and so there were some changes. Might have been quite a while back, 4 or 5 months ago, that the changes were decided on. But in any event, right now I noticed that we're going from meter maids or meter men to parking meters on several of those lots.
The gated lots. I only did it. I'll talk about lot. We call them lot H and G, which won't mean anything to anybody. But it's on the south side of Michigan Avenue between Mason and Monroe.
Sure.
So if we look at that geography, or as I like to say, you know, kind of behind where Crave and Post and Chow and everybody is. So what happened is we put in the gated lots. They became an obstacle because during lunch hour, which is a primary target, it was delaying people from getting to and from work, getting back to
getting
work.
Getting in and out of the lots, right?
And Ford Motor Company changed their lunch policy over this thing and shortened the allowable lunch hours.
Oh.
That was a huge impact on our restaurants and businesses. Mm-hmm. So we needed to move people in and out of that lot much quicker. And when I became mayor, I looked at this and began to examine, and I made the decision that we would commit to meters, which is short time, a new investment, mm-hmm. which we'll recapture in almost 2 years. So we'll make up the money with the savings mm-hmm. on salaries and stuff and in about 2 years. But the key thing is that it provides, and we're opening, this is including opening another ingress-egress off of Monroe,
which
is another oversight that I don't know why. I've had nothing but fault with the planner. The person we hired has been just, in my mind, a disaster in terms of the design elements of the parking area.
Yeah, my car, even I don't have a big car. I kept hitting the curbs going in and out of the gated area even.
So those are going to come down. And part of this is that's going to be narrowed, and the gatehouses will come down.
Yeah, right.
We'll add a new entrance and egress. But the goal here was to basically just make it easier to use and let people get in and out quicker because it was really hurting us. Then the back lot had been set aside for sticker, you know, a permit only for employees. We thought that'd be it's the other side of the tracks. So we had that at $25 a month, whereas a sticker for the month in the regular lots is $40.
Oh.
So we priced it for employees. The problem is we didn't get that many employees that purchased them. So we had these empty parking. Now, again, so I become mayor, I'm looking. We got all these empty parking lots, people pulling them because there's the other lot's full, and they get a ticket. So we got to get rid of it. So I had a space, I had an office out in Gross Point, and they had the near in were 75 cents an hour, mm-hmm. and then further out were these 10-hour meters. So we're now put in 10-hour meters. So in that lot G on the other side of the tracks, you can put in at 25 cents an hour. So they're discounted at half price, and they're 10-hour meters. So now employees or anyone who's going to be there long-term can go in there. We're also going to be meeting with the businesses to look at the hours of operation and look at duration. You know, right now the meters are set for 3 hours. There's no magic there. It could be 4 hours. It could be 6 hours. It could be 2 hours. So we're trying to structure it to make sense for the customers and so on. Now there's people who want us to get rid of it, and I keep going, I'd get rid of it in a minute if I have an alternative way to pay the debt on the decks, because that's... I mean, I'm blunt. The only reason we're in paid parking.
Does anybody go in those decks?
Yeah, but not enough. Because the we actually have right now a commitment on a hotel, which was the original proposal. It was supposed to be a hotel and an office building, seven stories. That's in 2001, that's what was projected. The market just changed, and you couldn't build an office tower in Dearborn now because of new cost construction.
You remember, I'm an architect.
Yeah.
I don't go into decks.
Yeah. Well,
I don't go into them at the. They are a place to drive people mad.
Well, let's not talk about that because we got them, and
there's no.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, that may or may not be true. It is certainly a fun challenge to drive up and down a big deck.
But,
I just want to say that the Royal Oak, of course, has all these metered lots, and people go in and out just fine. I tried the metered lots a couple of days ago in West Dearborn, and I think the man who was giving me quarters has changed. Did he say that these meters also, you can get a magnetic card or something?
Yes, We're going to be pushing that. I see this as the best tool we can get. It's a loadable card, reloadable
right,
card.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're in the process of trying to order equipment on each side of the street where you could go up and you can get the cards. Maybe get change.
Change is an issue, yeah.
But even, I'm also working on the convenience of paying parking tickets, not because we're interested in writing a lot of tickets, but we want to make it convenient. Right now, it's hard, and we want to be able that you can go and pay it right then before you leave the site and say, okay, I don't have to think about it again.
Yeah, good idea.
But we'll put in two machines at least on each side to start with, and so they'll be accessible and people can do that. But the magnetic cards work in meters or at the lot, so that's why I think they're a good tool.
We're talking with Dearborn Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly, Jr., and I almost never call you Jack. I don't know. It's
Jack's
just the office, just Mayor O'Reilly and all that. But Susan?
Since we're talking about driving, and I have every time I drive over here, I'm dodging all these potholes. And I mean, it's all through Metro Detroit, not just Dearborn, obviously. But
that's
right.
News.
How is this being addressed?
Well, I've had, since being mayor, five, I think, meetings with MDOT on topics, and we're trying to make progress. One of the things that happened, I don't know if I can blame her or not, at least except for maybe not doing empirical investigations, but they had us scheduled for resurfacing of West Dearborn, Michigan Avenue, West Dearborn, for 2009. That was the schedule. And so we were kind of counting on that. And so this year they identified that was now off because they realized what they had scheduled was resurfacing, which is really kind of milling off the top, smoothing it out, and then doing a new coating, sort of a 10-year job to, 10 to 15-year useful life. But that was about $3.5 million in the budget. They came back and said they have to do a reconstruction. The base is too bad, the supports, the steel support, everything is too bad. They have to tear it all out and put in a new construction. At that point, you move to $17.3 million comparable. Mm. That also takes it out of the budget. So now they're looking at where in the budget can we plug it back in because, they project over out years. And they were telling us 2014. We said, that's unacceptable. We just can't. It's just not acceptable. So we had our state representatives, Gino Polidori and Morris Hood, and our state senator, Irma Clark-Oman, convene a meeting with MDOT and other people to say, look, this isn't going to work. We need to do better. So we're working on that. We're shooting for 2010, which is about as close as we're going to get. It won't be 2009 because that budget's coming too quickly, to try and get the funding to get it done. But that's where we're at now. But the big difference was that they first thought that they could do just a resurfacing. Now, in later this year, in 2008, they're going to be doing the bridges over Ford Road at Evergreen and at the Rouge. And at Evergreen, it'll be nice because they'll redesign the entrance to Henry Ford Community College with the access.
It's just a terrible little route.
Right. So with the access, with the acquisition of SME, they're able now to work out a better approach. So that's something that will be a benefit to Henry Ford, of course. Well, in the interim,
Henry Ford took over SME.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They purchased it all.
But yes, we bought the land. It has been signed. The deal is signed, and we have the land. And the Society of Manufacturing Engineers is still leasing, renting from us for a while, maybe for the. Yeah. But they don't need all the space, and we're developing plans to take that over. We're out of parking space here too.
Yes, I understand.
The business is booming. I mean, people need to be retrained and continue to be educated, of course, in our fast-changing world here. We had a little setback, just in case you want to know, with with Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. We had something like $8 million we saved up for 3 years to resurface our parking lots and just extend them a little. They'd given tentative approval, and then they decided, oh, you got wetlands. We were just going to extend them a little, but what you'd really have is wetlands, and there's migratory birds or something. So we've got to redesign the plan, and thank goodness we have the extra property to do that, but it's going to cost us another $8 million to slightly extend our lots, and I'm all in favor of saving certain birds anyway.
Right.
I don't know which ones we're talking about here, but, and so it is difficult. I mean, you don't want to, just like with the CSO project, you can't say no, it's a good purpose. But there's always some setbacks, and the costs are so major.
But I think one of the problems is we had a very bad winter here in Michigan.
Oh, terrible.
We had a very, very bad, with a much more snow, much more ice, colder weather than we thought.
Who specifically is responsible for Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn? Is that the county?
State of Michigan.
State of Michigan.
State trunk line. Okay. Michigan, US 12. It's a US thing. It's a state trunk line. So they're ultimately responsible. Oh, the state is.
And they have so much extra money.
Wasn't that whole thing just reconstructed 7, 8, 9
not Michigan.
Years?
Not in the west. Not in that section.
Yeah, it was the east.
East Dearborn.
East Dearborn, Michigan Avenue.
Downtown Detroit started here.
They did. I'll tell you what. East Dearborn, from Greenfield going east all the way downtown Detroit, that was all redone over the last few years, the whole thing.
Right.
They did in the 100-year anniversary of Ford, they came out and did what I considered, I'm sorry, but a really bad job, but they did what I called a remilling and surfacing. The problem is because they didn't reduce the mill, they didn't mill enough off.
Right.
You could have these things where the drains and so on, the sewer access drains, are now about an inch and a half below the road surface because they just added more asphalt, and that creates their own problems. But that was a short-term fix.
It was a cosmetic thing just for the people coming in to celebrate it for Motor Company. They didn't really make it a long-term fix there. Okay. Well, we're going to move along. We do have Mayor O'Reilly with us here for just the rest of the hour, but only another 20 minutes. It is our pledge drive. Remember to call in with your pledge. Either Ned or Susan will be glad to take the call. Coming up at 2 o'clock is Joanne Korchinska and her Highway 61 Blues Show pledge drive, and we've got a lot of extra people coming in to take that call, too. I'm going to jump down here because these other issues, let's see. I want to know update. The towers that we operate, that we own in Florida, approval of the Dearborn Citizens was given to appraise and then try to sell those buildings. Mm-hmm. What's the status on that?
We just got the appraisal. We had the first appraisal done to see what the market was like, and it's a bit lower. We thought the neighborhood was $7 million. It's in $5 to $5.5 million. So the market is very soft there. The way that it was done with the council and put out is that there have to be three appraisals. So we did the one appraisal. Now, one of the things that, we wanted to see where the market was to say maybe it's not prudent to sell it now get an appraisal in 6 months or a year and see if the market changes. The other thing we've done is extended to the current residents who are there the right to come up with a way to purchase it. So it could be a cooperative apartment. It could be condominiumized.
Right. Oh, that's
so
nice.
That they have that opportunity. So it's what you'd call, if you had the lease set up initially, you'd have the right of first refusal. That's sort of what we've extended to them, is that when we're ready to sell and we have established a price, they'll have the right then to first try and buy it before we go out and seek bids. So that's the thing. Now it's kind of
that's a nice option. Everybody knows the market is bad, even in Florida these days.
So that's where we're at. And again, it was part of the asset thing. When I came on board and we're in tight budget, my first instinct is before you go and tell people we may have to cut services or raise money, you need to say, have we examined our assets to see do we still need them? So the towers was one where it's a great thing and it's a great advantage, but it only benefits so few Dearborn residents. Mm-hmm. And even if it didn't cost any money, it's a question of should we be running that there as opposed to other things. Yep. Camp Dearborn was the other one we examined.
Right.
The issue with Camp Dearborn is more difficult because it's always been zoned as recreational use only, which is a much lower tier for taxation and so on. And so it would have to be rezoned. So I met with Supervisor Green in the Milford Township early on and talked to him. Well, they've just finished their master plan, and it's a good document, and we talked a lot. I really like him, and I think we're going to have some new relationship with them with regard to Camp Dearborn anyway. But what it was clear is that they have no idea, no intention of intensifying use north of Maple Road.
I see.
And that's part of their master plan, and I learned that that the Huron Metro Clinton Parks had attempted to sell like about 188 acres of little dog leg up by 59. Mm-hmm. They weren't using. They were going to sell it, and protests in Milford Township were greater over that issue than anything in the last 20 years.
Wow.
They just did not want to sell for more intensive development.
Mm.
So I think it makes it realistic. If we sell it as recreational property, the only ones who want to buy it, and Supervisor Green offered to buy it from us, but it'd be like 10 cents on the dollar.
No.
And so I'm not going to waste an asset. So what we've done, this past year was the first year that they raised enough revenue to fully cover their operating costs.
I saw that in the report.
And
I was surprised,
yeah,
but I'm glad to see that.
Well,
and that in fiscal year 2009, it's going to be profitable, you think?
Yeah,
clearly a profit-making situation.
Well, we're adding 60 more of the full campsites, which you've never had out there before, which is the full water, potable water, sewer hookup, along with the electricity. And they have had high demand, high usage. And so we think that's the market. People that own recreational vehicles with this gas price, if they can go out to camp for a week or a weekend,
save on the hotel bill.
And they don't have to drive. Right. They don't have to drive that far.
Well,
then
that's right.
Then they have the amenities without the cost. So I think that's a place
really
that camp can go, and we can exploit that.
Okay, speaking of amenities, the Dearborn pools, splash pools, in addition, it's costing a lot to operate our pools in Dearborn, apparently, because they're quite old collectively,
right,
and they're going to need a lot of upgrading, modernization.
They were all built in the 50s, and so we've done a lot of things, but the main infrastructure has not been upgraded. And so what we're looking at is basically we have very talented staff who've gone all over the state and found out who has the kind of equipment we had, and they're buying and salvaging parts to keep them going because you can't get new replacement parts.
It's like our elevators on campus
there
and a few of our buildings from the 1960s.
So anyway, what we examined is we took and we track usage, so we know the total usage over summertime, and so we were looking at an alternative instead of having to invest a lot of money in bringing them up to scale. But we're just looking at alternatives. So the notion is that maybe some of them could have splash parks where you use the existing infrastructure for the water leads and so on in the drainage, but then they don't require the level of staffing. I mean, each pool requires quite a bit of staffing to be operational, and so we would reduce our staffing costs and so on and the infrastructure costs and still provide a product. And many other communities have this. I mean, Livonia used to have 6 outdoor pools that they operated. They cut back to 3, and I think something was done where somebody came up with some additional money. But we've never closed a pool. These pools have been operating since the mid-50s. And we're simply talking, looking, and we see this level of usage, which we track, against, the cost factors, and we're saying this may be somewhere where we need to cut. We're in that debate, and we had a lot of people come to the Recreation Commission, but they were... I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a guy who looks at facts. I had the names that came run against the people who actually bought pool passes or family passes or anything, and that's a very small threshold. So you have, so you got to weigh, those issues.
Actually, the concept is more than just like a wading pool. The splash pool, as I understand it, was going to have some little slides and other things, so it wouldn't have much water per se. People wouldn't drown as easily, but you have little other activities that would also be created. Now, those would that be? I mean, it all depends on how it works. Those could be, of course, I guess, added on some of the property we already have, but they could be instead of. Or was there an idea to maybe add a splash pool in a place in a neighborhood that didn't even have a pool?
No, right I now? Think we were really looking at the pools. The way the pools are distributed seemed pretty good. I mean, they were done in the population density in the past. I think the east end, if anything, probably is more dense, against the total ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if anything, we'd want to do a little more there. But clearly, we have the distribution now, and we have the infrastructure, which is the key thing, there. But, again, we're going to go through this. Right now, what the Recreation Commission is recommending, and we have in our budget, is we'll keep all the pools this year for sure. And what happens, though, is if the equipment fails and we're having trouble replacing and so on, we're going to reconsider those and see what we can do. So that was sort of their compromise, and I think it's a prudent one. We just know what's coming. I mean, the big issue is if it's so hard to cut these small services, what happens in the bigger scheme of things?
Exactly. Well, it's the infrastructure costs that are the worst. I wanted to switch the topic to the future and see what were thinking about maybe new directions for the cities, things that you might be trying out. Of course, everyone is concerned about energy conservation mm-hmm. and green ideas. And I noticed the city of Dearborn has been green for a while. We're looking at the press release here from the city yesterday. Tree City USA for the 21st consecutive year.
Mm-hmm.
So we got trees.
I got trees.
And we keep planting more.
Get to be Tree City. You have to replace your stock and so on, especially with the ash borer and all that. Mm-hmm. We've been very aggressive in planting trees, but it goes way beyond that. We're looking at other things we can do. With our fleets, we're experimenting with some alternative fuels. We're looking at different things. So we're trying to be open to any kind of new ideas to reduce carbon emissions and to save cost.
So you got some solar panels going to be installed on the roof of the city hall yet?
Well, the city hall is quite an aesthetic, but we're looking at it. I tell you, but one of the things I have to mention that people always overlook is back in 1979 or so, the city needed more space, and there was talk of building a new city hall and doing whatever, adding on. The city chose to go with that low profile with a turf-covered the city council offices, the council chamber, and the clerk and treasurer are turf covered. Now that's the big buzz now.
Is having
turf covered roofs and stuff to keep the heat.
Enough soil to have grass and plants.
And if you think about it, the Veterans Plaza that connects the mm-hmm. city hall with the West Annex is what's now modernly conceived as that green or turf covered thing that you have moisture. We're ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
That's a great design.
Yeah. Most people don't realize that. That is such a great answer. I'm sure Ned would know as an architect, it has to be proper drainage or something in the design of that. But it's the heat buildup in the summer, and if you've got grass there, certainly it's not the hot mm-hmm. black colored asphalt or something that's going to absorb
the whole idea. That was a wonderful solution designed by Rossetti, as I remember. I mean, it respects the park. It's not an imposition on the whole site.
I'm proud to say that was my father was mayor that implemented that.
Yes.
Wonderful.
There you go.
There aren't too many things that I look at that I don't think I could do better. That's a wonderful solution.
Well, at this point, I wanted to, not break the news to you, because we had talked about this, and I talked about this with Mayor Guido's administration, but we're actually moving forward here. Mayor O'Reilly, as soon as I clear my throat, get all choked up when I think about this. We want to make WHFR energy independent.
Okay.
We want to start with being able to have enough, and I'm told it's photovoltaic cells, solar cells, mounted so that our transmitter can continue to broadcast even in a power outage, and that we can serve the community. In the last big outage, I think it was 2003 for 3 or 4 days for some people like me in West Dearborn. I called the electric company. I said, "How's it going? 3.5 days, And nobody called us from your neighborhood. We didn't know the power was out in your neighborhood. Excuse me. Well, anyway, still, but
aren't they looking at a board someplace?
They were not telling you the truth. I'm going to tell you right now. I know that
nobody called us. So I do recommend, folks, if you don't have any power, call DTE. Okay, but I've already started some discussions last fall with Alan Gelati, who's head of HFCC physical plant here, and Greg Laskowski, who's the energy tech person we have. In fact, there was a wind energy presentation here on campus today, available to the public. I didn't get to go, but we're going to try to. Obviously, we have to have a battery backup system for nighttime and so on. But we would start with the transmitter, and we know that there's some special grants available to businesses as well as private individuals, and that a lot of the cost can be paid back within a year or two through these tax incentives. And I'm sure you're aware of some of those things that are available. And what I found out in my research, too, is that Michigan is not such a bad place for solar. Some people think, it's so cloudy and rain. We're actually on the 10 scale. We're ranked by nationally known solar companies as 7, which means that in about, depending on your installation, but the new technology that's available for solar panels, not just to heat water, but to give you straight electricity flowing out of them, is 3 to 5 years, assuming once the tax incentives kick in.
So what do we need from the city?
Well, we're just going to keep working with the city. Yeah. We have to get our act together here. We have some energy consumption estimates. Because our transmitter is atop a different building, we're going to have two separate installations, one for the studio. But, if we minimize lights and things. It's only a couple thousand watts that we need total. I mean, if there's an emergency, we're not going to turn on all the lights and boot up all the computers that we normally need for operations. And we certainly want the city to know that we'll work out a partnership and how to share information. Mm-hmm. And at those emergencies, because I'm sorry, I can't understand any word spoken from that telephone pole and the PA system you have in the city right now. I get the warning buzzer, but it's like you drive into a Burger King and you're at the what did you say? So that's not perfect, but
I know, with the 1 o'clock whistle or
the 1 o'clock.
In 2003, though, almost all my neighbors, everybody seems to have a little radio somewhere, and they're all pretty much AM, FM, and they could have picked up latest news, and we did so many great projects in 2003, the city did, with free water and supplies for people then, and just getting the word out is always the issue, you know. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, good. Well, you should have a dialogue, because there's some ideas. You know, we've now geared up. I've got not only through our police and fire, but all the department heads, we've all taken IOC training, which is emergency training, to get qualified. So there's several levels of qualification, and that's one of the things we've been doing as we geared up. When I became mayor, I found out we hadn't done any kind of exercise or anything in a number of years. So we did a tabletop exercise, we did some other things, and we got a big thing coming up later this year in which we're going to go through a national testing program for emergency preparedness and so on. And so, you know, you have to keep practicing it. And I think that the problem is that you gear up and then you just don't do anything. So we've been very active this year in working toward emergency management. So we should have a dialogue and talk about that.
Well, with Henry Ford Community College's help, and they obviously underwrote some of the cost of putting the studio in place here, too, and they pay the electric bills. But we hope eventually we won't even take any of the electricity. I'm already told with a modicum of panels on top of this building, it's a flat roof, but I don't think they're planting trees, that we could generate all the power for here and maybe even send some back into the grid for the rest of the college. So we want to work on that. One of our advantages is our great loyal listeners. And folks, it is the pledge drive right now. We need your help continuing. Last year, we needed an extra $4,000.
The wires to the guy.
Right. The wires that hold our transmitting tower in place were rusted through. It had been 20 years. They were going to, our engineer said they're going to break and snap any time. The whole thing would have crashed down, and that would have been a very good service. And so our listeners came through for us there, and we think that the partial cost, and it's not going to be that expensive, folks, the partial cost for this installation, along with some other nonprofit foundations that we can approach, we think for the good of the city as well as our sponsored activity here, that we can achieve that. Last year, real quick, I asked you two things, and I guess they're just not going to happen, especially Philadelphia, the city, was hoping for wireless citywide internet. And Earthlink was going to be behind that, and they now backed out of the contract because, I guess, cost. They didn't realize what it was going to be. It's not really feasible for the city to offer that kind of service.
Well, we're actually working with the business district right now. There's a lower-cost alternative that Doug Feldkamp with our MIS department has found. I think it's like $25 per party or whatever to kind of do a whole district-wide internet. And I think that's probably lower than many of the people are paying individually if they just offer it now. So we've been meeting with the businesses to talk about that, and we still have that notion that we're going to start with a section, probably a commercial section, but eventually you if we can do that and it's cost-effective, you could just expand it.
Yeah, even some of the businesses that are providing Wi-Fi now, they might not have to. I mean, it becomes a citywide.
It becomes collective. So
collective,
it cuts their costs, and it's you don't have a problem. I mean, some people offer Wi-Fi, and people will buy a product somewhere else and then walk into their place and use their Wi-Fi or whatever.
Yeah.
Or overlap. As you know, you can't control the zone.
Exactly.
So many times people are tapping into other people's Wi-Fi. So having it district-wide would resolve those.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question about your future plans?
We have
plans?
Only about 5 minutes.
Are there any projections for mass transit in these times of energy conservation?
Yes. I actually met a couple weeks ago with the mayor of Ann Arbor. We're really talking about how we can begin to be aggressive about promoting the Ann Arbor-Detroit rail as a starting point. You've got to get a couple of principal corridors in to get attract the business and then be able to build off them. So that we see as a huge project for us, and that's probably the starting point, because what we're trying to do right now is get the U.S. Department of Transportation to declare that as a demonstration project. And that's a formal thing of a three-year period where during that period they have evaluation of whether or not they believe it could become a viable corridor.
Right.
But you can't get there until you go through the demonstration project. So our congresspeople, both our senators and both of our congresspeople from Dearborn, Senator Levin, Severin Stamenaugh, Congressman Dingell, Congress, are all supporting this.
Right.
And we think that's the best starting point. And it would tie to the airport eventually. The airport now is building their new terminal, but their plans are to take the tram that runs through McNamara now through the new terminal, then out past 94, and that's where they're going to put the rental cars, so they can move all the rental car stuff off campus. Mm. And that's where the train station would be at the airport. Now, if we can get a train connectivity from the tram at the airport, meaning right to your gate, into a train system between Detroit and Ann Arbor, then I think we can really generate some traffic.
But, your traffic on Michigan Avenue is getting very heavy, and I would think your businesses would not mind some mass transit coming right down Michigan Avenue, and it would bring more people.
Yeah, our problem there is simply a corridor. Now, the train there would come right behind there.
Right.
And the new train station we've already got designed, we spent a lot of money in cooperation with Henry Ford, would become the new entrance to Greenfield Village. Very exciting for us, because if we bring everybody entering the village to Michigan Avenue, we expose our business corridors to them. And so we have a design for a new train station and a location for it that's much more higher profile and more connected to a lot of the amenities we want to market. So that would be part of this. So there's some really exciting plans that just need to be moved along.
Sure.
Would that be a separate track?
No.
Or using the same track with more
track
trains.
That we all know that's currently Amtrak.
So a special design trains, maybe just for a commuter.
Right. It would be commuter. Their initial destination. Actually, Ann Arbor is partnering with some communities in the north. Because there's a rail line, there's a private one. They're looking at purchasing that and beginning to run some rail north. So we really want to make sure we get this thing going. But we need to promote it. If people want to write letters to the U.S. Department of Transportation recommending the Detroit-Ann Arbor rail be given demonstration status, that's what we need.
I mean, we've been talking about this for how many years now?
And even the even the Metro Airport connection for people here in Dearborn,
who
lives close to the station, you just ride the train over there and get the plane. Yeah,
Jay, that's what we think is exciting. People from anywhere around here could park their car in Dearborn, go get their plane, come back, come here, and either on their way or on back, they're going to stop somewhere. And
now you could use those two parking structures.
Yeah, but tourism and everything would just be greatly enhanced.
Yep.
Well, we really appreciate it. Do you have any topics in the last minute or so we have here that we haven't mentioned? You wanted to mention two of the people in Dearborn.
Student housing.
Okay.
University of Michigan Dearborn has done a survey that a nationally recognized expert that did this, and they have a high demand for student housing, graduate student housing, foreign student housing in general. And current demand with just the population that's already matriculated there is about 850 units.
Mm-hmm.
But they really, at a minimum, could use 2,000 units of housing. So we're working with them to look at some private development locations in Dearborn where student housing can go in. This is on a fairly fast track, and we think it'd be very exciting because, again, it brings young people here. They get exposed to the community if they really like it, and they get employed here, they might stick around.
And this is student housing for college students?
College,
or?
Probably.
Right.
College.
Yeah.
For HFCC?
We're working with U of M Dearborn, but we'll see. I mean, the thing that U of M Dearborn is looking at is, they want to put a little older people, but the idea is that it would actually be where there might even be some this kind of classroom things on the bottom of the sort of modern structure, and not the old 2-2 with a separate bath, but what's in demand. And they've got market studies that have demonstrated what price points are and what people want.
Jacuzzis.
So the data is very good.
They want jacuzzis.
No.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Okay.
They may want them, but you don't want to go there.
I don't want to clean them. No, okay.
That's right. And all the moisture and the mold and everything that goes with it.
Isn't there enough property on the campus now?
Well, the problem is if they go on campus, they have to work through the chancellors and U of M itself.
U of MD actually had student housing, but they've had to convert them over the years. It wasn't popular for a while.
Well,
and
they weren't functional.
If they were
so antiquated, and the design was just
like motels. They were
They're still there.
Yes,
they're used as
office space.
But the thing is, they just really didn't meet the need.
Right. One last point, Susan?
One of the things we've been talking about here on WHFR is the budget in Lansing. Mm-hmm. Seems to go on and on, and I don't think it's ever resolved. And you, as the mayor and all the other mayors, what is your concern with that issue?
Our concern is the federal state government keep giving us more rules to follow and more restrictions and then giving us less money. I mean, at the federal level, the average used to be about 20% of general revenue expenditures by cities. Now it's 6%. So that's a huge change. You know, we're down to less than a third of what we used to have in our budgets. And then at the state level, I don't have the actual numbers, but again, a big decrease in, for example, statutory revenue, which was a commitment made when we passed sales tax originally. So anyway, the relationship is such that I have great respect for their problems, but they keep kind of sort of saying, well, you know, home rule cities are a fiction in my mind anymore.
Keep these issues in mind as you're voting for new
Dylan
people for
office.
This fall. Thank you, Ned, for that Dearborn Heights plug. Joanne Korczynska and Highway 61 is coming up next. Our pledge drive continues. The phone number here is 313-845-9676. We want to thank Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. for coming by today.